when people ask me what addiction is like, for me, addiction is like being on the front of a train, mm-hmm. tied to it, and you can't get off it.
Yeah.
And it's going, and it's railing, and you want to get off, and you see the stops flying by, and you can't get off of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my life was kind of functioning around me. Things were happening. I wasn't quite present. And one day, I actually used the words of the first step, and I called a friend of mine and said, this is unmanageable. I'm done. I can't do this anymore, but I don't know how to do it.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
Hey, what's up? This is Christian from The Most High Show, and today I am sitting in some undisclosed location in New York State in a hidden gem of the lands with somebody very important to me, Reverend Sarah, the spiritually rebellious Reverend. And you're like the first like official person that we've had. Everybody else is just misfits trying to make it work.
I'm a misfit trying to make it work too.
Okay. Good. That's good to know. That settles everybody down. Yeah. The Reverend title should let everyone relax. That doesn't mean that we're not going to get real here.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a different kind of Reverend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we're going to talk a little bit about, you've wrote a couple books, you're an author, you're active in the 12-step community, you're active in One Spirit, School of Interfaith, Interspirituality, mm-hmm. right? Which is how I know you. And you do some work also around pets and...
I do, around animal chaplaincy.
Animal chaplaincy.
We got a lot of topics.
Yeah, which I'm learning a lot more about that. That's not a thing for me personally, but I know that it is a thing mm-hmm. for people. So I'm learning to be more sensitive about that. So what I'd love to do is, what's really interesting about your story is it pretty much covers every single thing that we try to talk about here on The Most High Show. It like covers everything. We have the 12-step aspect, the addiction aspect of it, and then we also have the spiritual component of it. And then what's also cool is here's this resourcefulness to take all these things, meld them all together, and then do something professional with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you doing today?
I'm great. This is awesome. It's really nice when we can take all those things and merge them together and do something professional with it, but also do something fun with it.
Yeah.
And something that's still a little sneaky and snarky and spicy and... you know, fits that misfit type of image as well.
Yeah. You have a shirt on that says spiritually rebellious.
I do. I am spiritually rebellious.
But that's also the title of your latest book.
Yeah, I have a book coming out in June called Spiritual Rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get to that, you are in recovery.
I am.
And so can you tell me just a little bit about that? And kind of set the stage so everyone understands kind of where we're going.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm in recovery because I have an addiction of more. And I grew up in a way where I was really had a lot of questions that weren't being answered by the people around me, right? And I had a lot of anxiety. I had a lot of, I'm not sure who I am. I'm not sure if I'm okay. I'm not sure if what I'm doing is... okay or not. And I found sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And well, it was the 80s, so I found 40 ounces, Camel cigarettes, punk rock, and I like to say random awkward hookups in the back of my Ford Fiesta. And that was my story of recovery and or of addiction. And it lasted until my early 30s.
Yeah.
And when people ask me what addiction is like, for me, addiction is like being on the front of a train mm-hmm. tied to it and you can't get off it.
Yeah.
And it's going and it's railing and you want to get off and you see the stops flying by and you can't get off of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my life was kind of functioning around me. Things were happening. I wasn't quite present. And one day I actually used the words of the first step and I called a friend of mine and said, this is unmanageable. I'm done. I can't do this anymore, but I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's how I found 12-step.
So did you go, you went straight to meetings?
I went kicking and screaming.
To meetings?
To a meeting.
So you didn't go to like a rehab or anything?
I didn't. When I called my friend Helen, she came over, took all the booze out of my house. She brought frozen spaghetti. I didn't have a microwave, but it was a nice thought. She brought frozen spaghetti. She said, you have three options. Number one, you can continue to drink until you kill yourself. And I said, you are being overly dramatic.
Yeah.
I'm not going to kill myself. And she said, running your car into a tree while you're drinking and drunk driving could be killing yourself.
Yeah.
I said, all right, that's cool. She said, two, you can go to rehab. And I said, no, everybody will know. She said, everyone already knows.
Yeah, right.
Right, everyone right, because we think we're so sly.
Yeah.
Right, we think we got it going on. And the third thing, she said, you can go to a meeting. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll go to a meeting.
Yeah.
And I went to one, and I didn't like it. And I left, and I got in my car, and I cried, and I pulled out the meeting list they'd given me, and I went to a second one, and that one stuck.
Interesting. Yeah, I always find it very fascinating when people do it through going to meetings. I had to be locked away, you know, to gain the enough clarity, but... I know there are many people who do, and I always just think that's such an amazing thing. I think it also speaks to that aspect of like whatever God in that moment is actually really stirring that pot and gets you moving to the right place. Someone says the right thing in the right meeting to keep you there long enough to stay sober for the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and you don't always recall what that is.
No.
Right? I have no idea what was said. I know that the first meeting that stuck, right? The second one, the first one I don't even remember, but the second one I first got to, it was all men and me. I was 35. Most of them were over 60. It was cold. I sat in my winter coat and I cried.
Wow.
And I felt ashamed for crying because I am a tough girl.
Right.
Right? I'm a tough girl. I didn't cry.
Did it stick that time? Right away?
It did, amazingly. You know, there's that word grace that I can use now that I couldn't use then, right?
Yeah.
But I came in and I stuck, and I hold on to my sobriety fiercely.
Yeah. So there's, you know, we started doing this thing called 12 and 2, where we go through the 12 steps in 2 days. Mm-hmm. It's like a workshop, right? You go off somewhere.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We did it in an island, and we're going to do it again in Georgia Mountains. And one of the things that spurred it was someone listened to an early talk from Bill W., and he said that if you didn't get people through the steps in the first 30 days of their sobriety, that the steps were useless after that. Because people start thinking that they're getting better, and they are better, and they're not willing to do the work. So, how quickly did your sponsor, did that whole process, what was that like in that fellowship? Like, were they quick to get you to the steps? Were they quick to...
You know, I remember the steps being so confusing at first, right? Because I'm reading them on the window shades, right? And I'm reading them, and there's all these words popping up that I was not real good with right then.
Yeah.
Like the God. G word, right? I couldn't even say God. It was the G word.
Yeah.
And I'm a preacher's kid. Right? And my father had died about a year and a half before I got sober. It was part of that down, that escalade, you know, to the end. And I wasn't real happy, and I didn't quite understand what was going on. But what I think happened was they sunk in a way that wasn't completely intellectual at first.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember someone would read the steps, and I was always in awe of the people who had them memorized. Right? And I didn't have memorized, and they kind of, and they sunk in. And so, but I had already started step one when I called.
Yeah.
When I called my friend, right? Step two was the stumbling block for me. Yeah.
Yeah. How quick did you get to doing a 4-step? Do you remember?
Probably too long.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And I started mine before my sponsor told me to. And I started it my way.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And she made me toss that.
Yeah.
Do it her way.
And right? Do it again.
That's right. That's right.
That's amazing. It's so amazing that it worked. And then, you know, I have a guy that I work with, and he's like, you know, the solution's free. I mean, it's there.
That's right.
It's out there. It's not complicated. You know, it's there. And, you know, we always say that it works if you work it kind of concept. And you're living proof of that.
Yeah, it does. And I think it works when people help you work it, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So you had an active community of people.
I did, right? I had that typical experience of, I have nothing in common with all these people.
Yeah.
And yet there's something here, mm-hmm. right? And there's something here that's going to be helpful. And I stayed.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not always easy, right? Because we bring our stuff to the rooms.
Yeah.
We bring it all, you know, we wheel in all our baggage with us, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's that piece of knowing that it is a life or death situation.
Yeah.
It is a life or death situation. For me, it's a life or death situation.
Yeah.
And I like life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you start liking it a little bit too when you gain a little bit of sobriety and you're kind of having that, you know, things have changed, things are different. And I have one more question for this phase here.
Yeah.
The book, the big book.
Yeah.
How important was that in that first 4 or 6 months?
Okay, so here's one of my secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want it?
I do.
So I was too afraid to buy my book in the meeting. Because the first meeting I went to that I left, I had tried to buy the book because I knew it was important.
Yeah.
And they said, we don't know where the literature guy is. And I'm like,
right, yeah.
Right. So I bought my book at Barnes & Noble. Yeah. Because I was too embarrassed and I wasn't able to take care of myself and I wasn't able to ask for what I needed at that time at the meeting. And so I went out and got the book. And 3 days later, I'm on a plane flying to a holiday. Right, that's what you need when you first get sober is a holiday.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I'm on a plane. And in a plane. Because it's great to drink on a plane, right? Goes faster. So I'm on the plane. I'm reading my little book, and the drink cart is coming down the aisle.
Oh, yeah.
All right? It's coming down, and there's this adorable blonde little stewardess, and she's coming up to me, and she looks at me, and she goes, I'm thinking you'll have a Diet Coke. And I said, And she said, I'm a friend of Bill W's.
Wow.
I'm thinking you'll have a snack pack, too, for free.
Yeah.
And I said, wow. And it was because I was holding the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and things like that early on, or even now when you say it, it's still so meaningful.
Right? You feel
right?
that?
Yeah,
yeah,
you feel it.
Yeah.
And it carries on.
Yeah.
And so the concept of the 12 step at play there, right?
Always at play.
Always at play.
Yeah.
And how that one action so many years ago, then even now today, someone's going to listen to that here.
Yeah.
And it's still living, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It is. And that's like that service where, I mean, I wish I had her name. I wish I had her number. I wish I even remembered what flight that was.
Right.
There's no ability to go back and say, wow, you may have just saved my life.
Yeah.
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 So you may have just saved my life if you're listening to this awesome podcast.
Yeah. All right. So you're in the rooms for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your pastor's kid,
yeah,
right? And the G word was hard for you.
G word and the J word.
The whole concept of that. But like many people in long-term recovery, there comes a time when it's like, okay, we have to address this.
Got to address the resentment. Yeah.
And there's been people on the podcast who've explained that, and I've seen it firsthand, right? Because there comes a point when it's like, all right, we need to address this.
Yeah.
And so you did, but you did it in a kind of different way. You went, can you tell us about that?
I would love to tell you about that. It started going to the library, mm-hmm. and I decided if I was going to figure out which God, I had to read all these books.
Okay.
And I started getting all twisted up, right? Because I just couldn't figure it out. And my sponsor at that time said to me, she said, Sarah, can you make trees? And I said, no. And she said, something or someone can.
Hmm.
And so my first higher power was that which makes trees. And then I worked with that for a few months. And then I realized that I had been carting around 1,500 sermons. Yeah. My inheritance as a preacher's kid, right? Because we don't get millions of bucks.
Right.
I'd got 1,500 sermons in manila folders. And I started to read them. And the really religious ones went over here in this pile. I don't want you. Yeah. The ones that talked about love and service and, okay, I'll take this. And I started to pile it. And then I started to open a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like some of it started to sink in a little bit. And then maybe I could take that one. And maybe I could take this one. And I read all 1,500 of them.
Wow.
And then I wrote a book about in the process of doing that. And it was amazing because by the end, now there's still some of the, there's still a lot of pieces that mm-hmm. I'm still working out, even as an ordained minister now, right? Even as someone who teaches at a seminary. There's still, there's a quote I love by Paul Tillich, mm-hmm. who says, doubt is not the opposite of faith.
Right.
Doubt is an essential element of faith.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I used the F word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty alcoholic of you, right? You read a bunch of sermons and then you decide, oh, I'm going to write a book when I do this.
That's right.
Yeah? That feels very alcoholic.
It did.
Yeah, it seems like something I'd be like, oh, let's document this whole process as I try and reconcile my relationship with
I call it my ninth step to my father.
Yeah?
Yeah, because my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 7 years, very alcoholic of me too, right? It took seven years to do it because I didn't want to let go of the process. But it was, you know, it was kind of like a little bit of fourth step. It was ninth step.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes challenging. How do you do the ninth step to somebody who's not around anymore?
Yeah.
Right? That's a big piece for a lot of us,
absolutely.
Especially a parent, right?
Yeah.
But out of that, I can say the G word now.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that's where I'm at. I'm at. During this time, I'm around 7 years, a little more than that, and I've felt a shift, right? And I've heard that from many other people who at this, you know, there's this 7-8 kind of, there's something that starts clicking, you know? And I always like to think of like the physiology part of it, right? Like, and I remember the counselor at rehab was like, I went back to visit them a year or two later, and I was sitting into a class and he was talking about how long it takes for like your brain, the neuroplasticity of your brain to begin to rewrite those neural pathways, right? And this is like science, right? Like they know this shit.
Yeah.
And him saying that, you know, opiate was much shorter, you know, a year to 2 years. But for me, which my drug choice was cocaine, that it could take up to 5 years.
Hey, we have that in common too.
Yeah.
There you go.
For the brain to rewire physically, right?
Yeah.
And so I really like the concept of this holistic approach to recovery. Yeah.
Well, it has to be.
Right.
Because the 12th step says that.
Yeah.
It says in all my affairs.
Yeah.
And that's how I found myself in so many 12-step programs that one of my sponsors tells me I need a 12-step program for 12-step programs.
Okay.
Right? Because because you get to the 12th step, it's got to be in all our affairs.
Yeah.
So it's got to be in what I eat.
Yeah.
In what I do and how I spend my time.
Yeah.
It's got to be all of that. And every time you go through the steps and you keep coming back to that 12th step.
Yeah. And you know where it fell off? The first area of my life that I've noticed it's fallen off, I'm trying to get it back on, is my house, the cleanliness of my house.
Oh, yeah. Don't look at my house.
Not making my bed, you know, my dresser is messed up and it is just like full of stuff. And, but it's like, it's become glaring to me, you know, I have it tattooed on my arm, trust God, clean house, help others. Right. And that clean house is like it's a metaphorical and it's also practical, you know,
it's a signal.
It is.
It's totally a signal, right? For me, it's my car.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the car, I drive a Jeep. And I look in it and, you know, there's the empty water bottles in the back. There's the notes here. There's the stickies all over the post-it notes of all my very, very important ideas. Right.
Yeah.
And I start to look and I always say like the inside of my car is like the inside of my brain. And when it gets to a certain point, you got a clean house.
Yes.
And that usually means there's a step that's off.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
My third step might be broken.
Yeah.
Right. I might need to do a little bit of a four step, a nine step, you know.
And that's exactly what, for me, it's four step.
Yeah.
And so while we've been out there, I did my fourth step. And so I'll hopefully be doing my fifth step soon. And what's interesting, though, is if 2 years ago I would have been in this position, I would have had this sense of shame, like I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I get it. Like, this is a lifelong process, you know? And I hope I never get to a point where I'm like, oh, I don't need to do that. Like, I love that I have this thing going on. And, like, I just recently read the chapter in the big book about the families. And I don't know if I read it before and didn't remember. But I was reading it recently, and I was like, oh, crap. Like, this is exactly describing my family mm-hmm. dynamic. And at first I was like, how do I not remember this? You know, how do I not know this?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it's still so relevant, and that, you know, you, for people who get that long term, sometimes you can kind of, life can take over. You can feel like, all right, I'm good. And maybe you are. I mean, everyone's mm-hmm. gets their own. But I'm happy and thankful that this is kind of like my gift and curse, right? That when I'm starting to slip, it's going to become very, very
apparent.
Apparent. Yeah. And at one point, when you don't hear me no more, there ain't been a podcast
That's
out
right.
in 2 months. We might want to check,
on Christian.
Yeah, because it's going to be obvious. And I'm thankful it's not something that's so sneaky, like a pride or greed or envy that just sits beneath the surface and no one really knows. No one can really tell.
I think, but even that we know those words now.
Yeah, right.
Right? And right. that I remember when I first got into recovery, and, you know, and I had a therapist on board, and, you know, I needed a village, right?
Right.
I needed a lot of support. And I remember she'd ask me how I'm feeling. I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
I don't know. And, you know, and they bring out that map of, like, that you use with, like, 5-year-olds to teach them what emotions
oh, yeah,
are
the
with the emojis
will.
Across it. Like,
oh, yeah.
which do you feel? And I'm like, that one?
Yeah.
Right? So, and then through reading the big book, 12 and 12, all the stuff that we read, right?
Yeah.
And then learning the discernment of, like, okay, this is off, or that's off, or this defect, or this shortcoming, or what, without the shame.
Yeah.
Without the bad and good. Switching that to healthy and unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Helpful, unhelpful. Serving me, not serving me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that really ties into, you know, this the spirituality aspect of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you found a place like One Spirit, much like I found it. And you've been able to... Can you just give me kind of like and explain it for somebody who might not understand what an interfaith seminary is and what it's about?
Yeah. So the short version I like to say is being interfaith, interspiritual is like being a free agent.
Right? Yeah.
So what it means is that, and interspiritual is a word that, you know, has been kind of evolved, but is a fairly new word, right? And the idea is that underneath all of our spiritual traditions and our wisdom traditions and philosophical traditions and science and everything that we use to find meaning, underneath all of that is this core something we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're looking for love.
Yeah.
We're looking for connection.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to be helpful, of service, right? We're looking for those kind of things. Now, we speak about it in different languages.
Yeah.
Right? We have different sacred texts. We have different spiritual practices. We have all these different ways that we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard someone explain it the other day that I just loved this, that like take the sun, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so we look at the sun, and in the U.S. we call it sun. And you're down in Latin America, you might call it soul.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, do you speak any other languages? Do you know if the sun in other languages?
Oh, yeah, soleil.
There you go.
French.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean there's a French sun and then a U.S. sun
right.
and
yeah.
whatever. So same thing applies to God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we have a lot of different names.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of different ways of expressing it.
Yeah.
Right? Just like we have different hair colors and we speak different languages and all this kind of stuff. These are expressions. They aren't different things in the way that I believe.
Right.
They aren't different things.
Yeah.
So it means that I belong to a organization where we treat all of those as valid paths.
Yeah.
Right? We're trying to get one place, but we recognize there's a lot of different ways to get there.
Yeah. And you said something on your website. I liked what you said, which is that I'm not here to tell you who God is, but to help you to find.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'll invoke my patron saint, Princess Leia.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who says, no one can choose your path.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what we try to do at One Spirit is to help people on their path. So it's like your 11th step on steroids.
Yeah.
Leading to a really full 12th step. I guess steroids wouldn't be the appropriate way. It's the 11th step, a really big 11th step leading to a really big 12th step.
Yeah.
Right? And when I got into 12 step recovery, I really had challenges with the 11th step.
Yeah.
It wasn't big enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was prayer and meditation. And in the 12 and 12, I couldn't really understand what meditation was.
Yeah.
So I needed some outside help, needed to find some other things. And now I have a messy spiritual life of all these messy good, mm-hmm. gorgeous practices
right.
that I didn't know existed before. And so that's what I found at One yeah. Spirit.
Yeah. Someone said to me once that it was because he was able to find a God of his own understanding, that was why and how he found Jesus. Yeah. And I thought, man, that's the way. If you're going to find Jesus, that's the way to find Jesus, because you're not being told who Jesus is. Jesus gets to tell you, gets to make that connection.
Jesus is an experience.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really, really profound that he said that, having that freedom. And I think that to me, like, you know, whatever I know, limited, because I'm only halfway there and still a student of the game, but it's, you know, the interspiritual kind of world, I'm beginning to kind of uncover and see, like, you know, it's very unique, because it's not like saying, like, this is how you approach it. It's to say, I'm going to hold and honor how one person wants to approach it. At the same time, hold and honor the way I'm going to approach it,
mm-hmm.
which is not everyone's going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, it's hard. It's yeah. hard to hold multiple things at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? We want to choose either or.
Yeah.
This or this, this
right.
or this, good or bad, right?
Right.
And so we get to this place, because the brain needs to sort. We have 60,000 thoughts per day
mm-hmm.
from the last report I read.
Yeah.
Not of my brain, but of, you know, science guys. And so we have to sort. We have to sort or we'd go nuts,
yeah.
right? But when we start sorting into only this, it's like with our steps too, right? So there's a lot of ways to work the 11th step. There's a lot of ways to
yeah.
work the 12th step.
Right.
Right? That extends to our spiritual traditions too.
Yeah.
But what if I say you can only do this step in this way?
Yeah.
I'm limiting.
Right. Yeah, and you're limiting people, right?
I'm limiting people. Growth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming the same thing is going to work for every single person.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a pretty big assumption.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
My experience so far has been that, you know, I see Jesus everywhere, but what's been amazing is that the whole process has also seemed to help me to realize that Jesus is everywhere,
mm-hmm.
right? And Richard Rohr is my favorite author and probably spiritual teacher, you know, is that there's this, he said something about, like, we have to really start thinking that Christ is Christ of the universe. Because the second we find an alien on another planet, they're going to blow the whole thing up, you know? We have to understand that this is a universal thing we're yeah. tapping into, yeah. right? And so I love that. That really...
But that's fairly new.
Yes.
And it's because... So in one of my father's sermons, mm-hmm. he talked about... My dad was born in 39, mm-hmm. right? And so he started his ministry in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy time to start your ministry,
yeah.
right? And he wrote about, but he wrote about what happened when we landed on the moon.
Mm.
And he said it became a theological crisis.
Wow.
Right? Now we were born, yeah, I was born with Star Wars, right?
Right.
So the universe was already open to me.
Yes.
But for my father and for other generations.
Oh, yeah. What's
right?
this mean?
There was no cosmic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then we have these Renaissance painters who've painted these gorgeous paintings of an anthropomorphized God. In a specific way
yeah, right.
that we've looked at and we've attached things
yeah,
to.
Right.
And what I did was somehow I had found a punishing parent
mm-hmm.
and a little bit of Darth Vader and a little bit of Voldemort and mushed them together and said, this is punishing God.
Right.
And what Rohr and what a lot of other people do is they say, no, that's not that.
Right.
And I had taken some of the messages that I had heard about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That I've now discarded into what I call my sacred trash. some of the messages that I heard in the world, I'm not sure if those are messages of Jesus, right?
Right.
So I think we have to look at our own experience of God, our own experience of Jesus, or whatever name we use.
Right.
I love to use the Force, mm-hmm. because it doesn't have a lot of baggage attached to it yet.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
The Force doesn't judge me. But all of this, all of these yeah. different names and all these different things, but we have to do that work.
Right.
We have to do that work because we learn things as children and we don't re-examine them. And I think yeah. what 12-step does is it helps us re-examine our beliefs.
Yeah.
Right? Knock those over.
Yeah.
Seminary experience.
Yeah.
Even just being on the spiritual journey, right?
Yeah.
And to re-examine and to look at, is this true?
Yeah. And creating a space where it's okay to ask those questions.
We have to.
Yeah.
We have to.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I think that that's kind of, to leave the, it's above my pay grade, to where does this get sorted out, you know? Like, I don't understand a lot of things, but to be able to ask the questions, you know, like my friend who says because he had this God of his own understanding, that he was able to really deepen and find a relationship with Jesus, and he gets baptized and he's off to the races, and that's good and that's perfect mm-hmm. and that works, and there's evidence of that working in his life, you know, and that was one of the things that led me to that, to interspirituality as a path.
Well, that's the key piece, what you yeah. just said. Right, which is how do you live this in your life?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I feel that spirituality is not so much about belief.
Right.
Belief is a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about what kind of people we are and what kind of people we become
yeah.
and how we are of service in the world.
Yeah.
Kicked up 12-step right there.
Right.
Right. And so if my beliefs are making me a better person, they're useful.
Yeah.
If they're making me push people away, mm-hmm. not so useful.
Well, and that's one of the things we talk about 12 steps is a program of action.
That's right. Right?
So you can't just believe in the steps. Mm-hmm. You gotta work
well,
the
you steps.
Well,
you can, but they're not terribly effective.
Right. You have to work them.
Yeah.
And that's been another thing for me over this last year of learning, you know, when you start applying these practices in your life and, you know, how a practice from a faith that you never thought could be useful becomes like meditation.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Coming up in the Christian world from a fundamental perspective, mm-hmm. meditation is this, they got it wrong with the meditation thing. And you know, so meditation was never an option. But it has been probably the single most effective form of me connecting to myself, connecting to God, learning how to meditate was huge. Right?
Yeah. Well, and that's what's so gorgeous about there being so many spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, even if meditation is problematic for someone, centering prayer might not be.
Right.
And it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It gets you the same place.
Right. Yeah.
Meditation, mindfulness. I mean, that's what, when I started digging into this and when I set aside the belief that if it's from a religion I didn't grow up in, it's not okay for me.
Right.
Right. Toss that right out
mm-hmm.
and said, let me go see where I find God and how I find God. And one of my favorite ones is forest bathing. I'm going to run some Japanese on you right here. And
okay.
Shirin-yoku.
Okay.
There you go. Forest bathing. So, you know how a lot of us will talk about, like, I find God in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, there's that. So forest bathing is you go into where there are trees, right? And we could do it, like, out here after mm-hmm. this. And you bathe your senses. So what am I hearing? What am I feeling? What am I sensing? What do I feel?
Right.
And it's that connection, again, to creation, because what is creation? God.
Yeah.
It's all of it, right? So by whatever name we want to use, universe,
right.
God, you know, I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even as you begin to describe that... It's you know, that's a lot of St. Francis's yeah. teachings, and life is lived through this connection to the divine through the natural order of things, right?
Yeah.
And even when Jesus says, I just know Jesus, so everything comes to that frame of reference. But when Jesus says, don't worry, you know, and then he goes, just look around you, mm-hmm. like all this is working, this mm-hmm. bird and these grass and it's all working. So this is all happening and working. Then surely, you know, it's going to work for you too, right?
That's right. If we do it.
Yeah, if you do
it. And that's the action again, right?
Right.
B because Jesus is a model, mm-hmm. a beautiful model mm-hmm. for how we can have that connection.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so looking at that and seeing what are these ways, how do I feel God? Mm-hmm. How do I feel sitting in this gorgeous meditation space right now with mm-hmm. Christian, chatting about this, right? With the squirrels outside running up and down that tree. How adorable are they? Right? And that's it. And that's God.
Right. Yeah.
Might be a little Jesus up in here today, too.
You don't got to look far.
You never know. We might have a lot of folks around here.
Yeah. So I want to put a link to your website, because your website, you had a lot of links to a lot of really good 12-step resources.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can you just tell people what your website
sure.
is?
Sure. It's modernreverend.com, which is M-O-D-E-R-N.
reverend.com
with an E, not an A. And then there's at the top it says 12-step resources. And one of the things that I really like to do is to consider 12-step as universal.
Yeah.
Right? Which, if we look at the original writing of the steps, it was.
Yeah.
We look at the 12-step, it's to carry this to everyone.
Yeah.
Before it was limited.
Yeah.
Right? And so how do we... there? One in eight of us is dealing with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of us affects a minimum of four people.
Wow.
That's the entire world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a lot.
That's a lot,
yeah.
Right? So 12-step, and I think what's great is go back to Rohr mm-hmm. with his, he has an excellent 12-step book,
yeah.
Breathing Underwater.
Breathing Underwater,
the title
yeah.
of it. There's so much out there. I have Zen 12-step books. I have all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
So I have this core canon, right, of my... multiple 12-step fellowships.
Yeah.
I have my conference-approved literature. I got my canon right
yeah.
there, like we haven't any. And then I've got all this other stuff of everybody else's interpretations of how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And so you go to modernreverend.com.
Modernreverend.com. And I have a list of those.
Yeah.
And so I collected some of my favorite books.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't aware of how many 12-step fellowships there are.
Right.
So I have a list of those in the websites that I called together.
Yeah.
And some other resources. And I think that sometimes it's helpful to have lists.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. I'm pretty sure there's some other stuff happening over here, so we probably got to keep it moving. Yeah.
Thank you for having me, Christian.
Yeah.
I love this podcast.
Thank you. Thank
I
you.
Love the way that you approach this.
Yeah.
I love your service in the world.
Thank
I can't
you.
Wait to see what happens next. I downloaded the app. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you to whoever happens to be watching
yeah.
today.
If you got this far in the podcast, then you can email me, contact@themosthighshow.com, and I'll buy you a copy of Sarah's new book. But you got to email me, and you had to have made it this far in the podcast. contact@themosthighshow.com. No one's took me up on these offers yet, but...
They haven't?
Not yet.
I can sweeten it.
Okay.
Okay, so Spiritual Rebel comes out June 11th.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you some books.
Yeah.
And I got some baseball caps.
Okay.
And I got some water bottles.
There we go. You get a whole kit.
I'm going to give them a whole kit.
Let's do it.
All right.
All right.